We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
So.
Right. Well, one interesting... I do try to imagine life on the other end of this tunnel, and it's like part of me does wonder if, like, we'll see... And I mean, I had heard these kind of, like, prognostications when people talked about, like, situations similar to this. You know, like, the idea, like, oh, the grid goes down and people are, you know, kind of left to fend for themselves. Oh, like, a very apocalyptic situation such as what we're living in now. And that maybe, you know, when we get to the other side of this, there'll be a greater appreciation for community, for local community, you know. Maybe there'll be
maybe.
Sort of a re-embrace of the people around us, in a sense. Maybe people won't be so you know, conditioned to be in their headspace and their phone all the time.
Maybe. I hope you're right. Did you ever read The Plague by Albert Camus?
No.
It's about a guy who survives a plague. I think Camus was from Algeria or Morocco. I can't remember now. Algeria. Okay. And so it's kind of an interesting story, but I hope that it leads to a renaissance of appreciating life. And so this morning I got up and I looked at, there's a conjugation of Mars and Jupiter, and then Saturn was off to the left. And I thought, man, I'm really going to enjoy this today, because who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. And maybe people will do what you said, Tim, is put the phone down and pay more attention to really being in the moment and alive. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, maybe something will could come of it, you know?
Some good has to come from this. We'll see,
I hope so.
You know. Yeah.
Let's be positive.
All right,
about
Carol,
that.
Yes. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. I hope
sure.
you check out the rest of the show and you know, we'll be back next week for sure, to see where this is at. So if you want to call in next week, feel free.
All right, thanks, Carol, and stay safe.
Thanks.
Yeah, stay safe. Well, there you go. I feel good, you know, about that, because part of this thing is like,
though.
What's that?
Well, the idea that somebody would just kind of say, nope, not coming in anymore, that's a possibility. Until now, I've not heard a report like that, but I hope that this is rare. But again, you know, the pressure is going to be on people. We're going to ask so much of them, Tim, and they're going to be stressed beyond any kind of belief. And again, with no end for a while, it's just going to go and go and go. And then, you know, exhaustion can make you do funny things. So let's flatten the curve.
And also, I mean, I can only imagine sort of like, with hundreds of people dying in Italy, like what the mental toll is on the workers, the rescue, you know, medical workers there. You know what I mean?
It's terrible. It's terrible. You can harden yourself. And actually, maybe this is where some military people could maybe sort of like give a talk about how to get through some of these things for less seasoned practitioners. If you think about like the Marines, whose units kept going, even though they had 25-30% casualties, and they kept going. They found a way to get through that. I can't imagine anything more horrible than to see, you know, a third of your friends die or get hurt really bad, and you still have to do the mission or defend yourself. And they kept going. It's you know, maybe they would have some insights as to how you managed to do that, or talk to the guys who were stuck in Khe Sanh in Vietnam, in the encampment, and couldn't get out, and how they coped with that. So,
let me see if anyone else had any questions on here. I don't think so, although Miriam Hamblett rightly said, you know, and I made a post about this in a somewhat different way, but I was putting over the janitors. I used to be a janitor, so it's like I hear all these stories about, like, you know, when the schools all closed down, the janitors still work, and they're cleaning up the schools. So it's like they're, you know, it's sort of like, you know, they're kind of like typecast janitors. So it's like they don't get, their jobs aren't glamorous. They don't get, like, the kudos of doctors and stuff. But in this situation, in this pan, like, they're, it's like grocery workers, You know, I mean, it's like, how many people yeah. like shit on the people that they buy groceries from? Like, these are,
yes.
these people are fucking heroes now, man. Like, they're putting their lives, they're putting their well-being on the line every fucking day to sell groceries. It's like, I never, you know. So, alongside all the, you know, the first responders and the medical people and everything, like, the grocery people and the janitors are like, they're holding this fucking country together, you know, this group
they,
of people.
They have a role to play, and I can tell you that if the truck drivers don't drive the trucks and things don't get delivered, you can have the greatest genius in the universe, and they won't be able to do anything without the supplies and equipment, will they? So we
yeah.
all have our role, and maybe we should respect each other a little bit more, but I think you're right. This probably has opened people's eyes to the fact that the invisible people, the ones that we just look past most of the time, they're more important than maybe we ever really thought. And they're the ones keeping us alive. How about that?
Yeah, it's pretty wild, you know. It's like, it's pretty wild. You don't even really give much thought to the people at your grocery store. At least, you know, I mean, I'm friendly with them. I'm like gregarious with everybody. But still, it's like, a lot of these are kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yes.
wow. Shit, who would have thought, like, you know, who would have thought that these kids that ring up your groceries would end up being, you know, so integral to us getting through this? Now, is there, I mean, people, to sort of throw back to last week's show, so you, I think you absolved me off the air, but so here's what happened. I told you, I was hunkered down for till April 1st, so, but after we did the show, the next night, Saturday night, I went to the store to get the last bit of groceries that I thought I would need. So that's the only thing I've done. Otherwise, I've maintained strict quarantine since last Saturday night. So is that permissible to just run out to the store for groceries or what?
It is, because once you've gone through the kind of the incubation period, you're probably not going to be a threat to anybody. So, you know, I mean, you were possibly exposed and concerned about that, feeling unwell. But again, once the signs and symptoms go away, I think they say like 3 days later, it varies. You're probably fine in terms of whatever that
yeah.
was.
Yeah, well, I'm more just worried sort of the give and take. I mean, I didn't even consider, you know, like I said, I highly doubt that it never really crossed my mind like that I could be a danger to anyone just because you know, I really was doubtful, maybe cautiously optimistic that nothing had gotten on me. But either way, it's like, yeah, I was trying to avoid contact with anybody, you know?
Yeah, that's the way that you want to be. The what you described does not sound like COVID to me. But in general,
I don't think so.
I think you were fine. You know, a few days after the symptoms go away, you're probably okay. You're certainly much less likely to transmit than somebody who's acutely ill or pre-acutely ill. Where folks can unwittingly transmit. And a lot of viruses are very good at that. That they evolution has honed them to be very infectious during a prodrome period, where the patient may not really even be aware they're unwell, or may just feel a little bit unwell, and they're cranking the virus
right.
out already. So I
yeah,
think
exactly.
you're okay, but. I mean, in general, I would say, yes, Tim, you are the danger, but in a fundamentally different way.
You mean I'm a social danger?
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. I'll accept that. I'm a scoundrel. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But,
yes.
you know, when the streets aren't safe for scoundrels, that's when you know things are bad. So, that's the world we've entered here. Yeah, no. That was more paranoia personally than genuine. At no point in my mind was I ever like, I need to do something about this. It was more just like, oh no, I hope this isn't the start of, oh, okay, no, that wasn't anything. So to me, it was,
yeah.
I never
yeah.
really,
but,
you know.
But
I had enough tangential connections with the Biogen thing that was like, oh shit.
Yeah, that's all it takes. That's
yeah, I know. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yes. So, no, you did the right thing. And I would say that people who are on their own, one of the things, if you can, lay in a supply, you know, of enough provisions so that if you did fall down sick, you could manage for maybe up to 2 weeks if possible, but certainly at least a week, because you may become so ill you won't be able to go out and get anything. You'll have to call for help.
Well, that's my concern. That's kind of what led me to start out and mention that I went to the grocery store. I got off on the tangent about the breaking the quarantine. So I may end up going to the grocery store again this weekend just to reload. But otherwise, I don't go anywhere else. But
that sounds wise. Yeah, restock, you know, and prepare. Just kind of keep yourself so that if the worst does happen, that you can get through that. But the bad part is that not everybody can do that, you know. And that I hope that we have enough folks who will volunteer to deliver groceries as needed, and we'll keep each other going as best we can.
Well, that's what led me to mention that was and it's sort of like a cyclical, maybe a self-fulfilling thing or something, but it's like I see a lot of concerns that there's going to be food shortages, and then in turn I see a lot of hoarding, and it's sort of like that sort of feeding off itself. You know, maybe when we can get out of this, everybody in fucking America will have enough food for like 2 months. All the grocery stores, then they'll go under because no one will buy fucking groceries anymore because they have a shitload already. But I mean, you can't predict this, I assume. But it's like, I mean, how concerned are you that we're going to get to some situation where now we can't even fucking get food, you know, where all of a sudden there are food shortages or they have to shut the grocery stores down or some shit like that?
I think it right now is unlikely. What could happen is that enough people who are in the industry and deliveries, delivery industry, could get sick that there might be delivery gaps. And what I think is that if that came to light, probably what would happen is, just like our governor did, have mobilized the National Guard to maybe make those deliveries. It's, you know, the possibility, what I see is not shortage of food and products so much as people to move it and stock it. And so, you know, depending on how bad this becomes. Right now, I think we're okay on the food. We'll see. One thing that happened down here is they are restricting access from Mexico into Arizona. We have a major food production industry, the greengrocer fresh produce industry around Yuma, around the Colorado River, and a lot of that is harvested by people who are not citizens. And hopefully they'll make allowances to get those folks across the border as needed to harvest that. Now, a lot of the food that we actually enjoy that comes from our part of the country is put together or harvested by people who are not citizens. And I'm telling you, it's hard work, man. So these people work hard, and it's difficult and not fun. You know, and so those are other very underappreciated workers, you know, that we've been blessed by. I know a lot of people don't like the idea of guest workers or illegal aliens, however you want to refer to them, but they do a lot of necessary and good work for us. So I hope we can get that ironed out. But if we seal up too tight, we're going to be in trouble. You know, we're going to lose a lot of crops.
All right, we got a caller here on now. So same rules as we had for same rules as we had for Carol. So if you got a question, fire away, and you know, we can't keep you on for the next 45 minutes. So you don't by virtue of calling become a co-host. All right. So let's see.
Mm-hmm. Well,
a little
your
computer
loss,
there.
Yeah.
All right. 469 here. What's going on? Is this Steve Ray? I figure it's probably Steve.
Yeah. It is Steve Ray, and I tuned in a little late. Did we hear the 30-second clip, Mr. Dr. Cocon? The truth about you?
It's Steve Ray, the rabble rouser. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh. What a thing to be called during a pandemic.
Do you have a question, Steve?
I did want to know the real truth. Apparently, Tyler is not a medical doctor or board certified, so he said he'd tell us like, I don't know, I guess what his actual specialty is.
Oh, what the heck I am? I have a PhD, actually in biochemistry, but all my research was in microbiology. And what I first started out on was working on viruses, human cancer viruses, that are actually in a lot of us. It's quite interesting. They're just little guys, but they end up causing malignant transformation. And so one of the things we were doing is trying to figure out which genes, and there's only five in these things, that led to them causing a cell to go cancerous. And when I came into the lab, a guy named Mike Olive had found something really odd, and that is that he found viruses that had apparently caused the cancerous transformation without the genes that we thought were essential. For the longest time, we couldn't understand that. Now we understand that our cells have within them the seeds of their own destruction, oncogenes when they're stuck in viruses, but they're actually growth regulators and other things that get turned on inappropriately at times and or by mutation. So that's kind of how I got started. And then I continued studying viruses for, next 10, 12 years of bacteria. And it turns out we live in a world full of viruses. Most of them don't harm us at all, but boy, do they do a number on bacteria and algae in the ocean. So it turns out that they are major drivers of all of the world's biology. So that's how I got into virology. And some of the principles are pretty much the same. But no, I don't treat patients. I'm not board certified. I'm not an MD.
We explained all this at the beginning of last week's show. But and we've stressed, people shouldn't. Tyler's just providing the most informed opinion I can find. So, and he's a doctor. He's a doctor of fluids, or
a doctor of genes. It's not like, person's what. Okay, well,
that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
I do have to chuckle at the Carol thing. Oh, I just hope people don't fall into despair, especially because half the country are insane madmen who will infect themselves to show they don't care. That's kind of despair-inducing. So I just
We're trying not to induce despair, but
it's all good. I just chuckled. So I got a.
What's the scene down in Dallas, Steve? Is there a lockdown? Awesome. Are the restaurants open? What are the rules and restrictions, if any?
Let's see. The rules vary from town to town, block to block, and I haven't been going out much, so I haven't been checking. But the head shop, it said that if they get ordered to shut down, they're going to stay open because people need their water pipes and they need to get paid. So it's a state of. But they are not allowing more than 7 people in the store at one time. They're wearing masks. Everyone is trying to not touch stuff. I'll put my groceries up so they just scan it with the barcode, and then I take it, and then I just only endanger my fingertip on the filthy point of sale system, and try to have the clerk touch nothing. So there's that sort of pro-social behavior going on.
I didn't even think of that. So you scan it yourself, is what you're saying, like right in front of the clerk?
No, I don't commandeer the scanner, but I'll look at the item and make sure that the barcodes are all facing her, so it's easy, so she only has to touch the scanner.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a strategy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. All right.
Yeah.
Folks can thank God it's out here on a national media. So, have you heard anything, Tyler, about an S strain and an L strain of coronavirus? The L strain is deadly, and the S strain is irritating, but much more transmissible.
No, I haven't, but that would be something that is definitely in the realm of possibility because we've seen examples like this before, and so it wouldn't surprise me that somebody's figured out, oh my God, there's two of them in co-circulation. But I haven't seen any reports, so.
Okay. Well, you can confirm or refute this when you return next week. I know I'm looking forward to it. It would also be consistent with, Wuhan, Italy, and I think Toledo, which all have, heavy Chinese industrial presences. I've heard they've had more deaths in those areas and much less. So,
Okay.
But again, you can confirm that in case maybe I'm one of those spreaders of rumor. But you're here to extinguish that. Conspiratorial notion.
Okay. Now I found an article that is, I think this is probably what Steve saw. I'm not going to read it right now. It's coronavirus. Are there two strains and one is more deadly? So that's pretty much what you're. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll look at this and Tyler will. You know, I'll pass it along to Tyler. It's a very. Yeah, this is what you're talking about. An L type and an S type. Yeah. It's kind of long. We can't read it in the middle of the show, but we'll file that away and we'll tackle that next week. That's from March 5th.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so, but I mean, this is moving fast. How would we know? Yeah.
No, thanks for bringing that up, because I hadn't seen a thing, and this could be really interesting, what the dynamics of that thing are.
Oh,
I watch a shitload of news, and I haven't heard that at all, so.
One theory is that the Chinese recently said, this is an American bioweapon, just out of the blue. And that's weird, unless they know it's an American bioweapon, because they stole it from us. So perhaps, because the U.S. allows, deliberate theft of, computer equipment that will be all full of, viruses or monitoring stuff, how, the Iranian reactors got sabotaged, and that's what the Russians. So, and we know China has been sending tons of, smart people to fill our universities and then bring secrets back. Perhaps something was left unlocked accidentally. Which was stolen and taken back to Wuhan, and so that's why they've got the nasty version, and maybe, just maybe, the U.S. government has been, spread the weak version, or the safer version, last year, just sort of a demonstration of, you stole it, dumbass, and you can't use it for a germ, because we already inoculated, and this would also be a good drill to see how many doctors actually quit in the face of a purported deadly.
That's interesting. That's an interesting theory, Steve.
I'll wait to be thrown off here. I'd like to hear your reaction, if you can confirm this. Back in 2002, Johns Hopkins reports during the SARS epidemic, a guy in China had the most deadly case of the Hershey squirts. It everywhere, all over the shared bath, and it created a, quote, aerosolized viral plume, which wafted down the hallway, crawled under his neighbor's doors, and killed them through fecal oral transmission. Can you confirm, for everyone listening, confirm without reservation, in just one word, that farts can spread coronavirus?
Farts.
Is that what science proves for? Well, but SARS is a coronavirus. It's a true silent but deadly killer amongst us.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
We've got to wait for the study to come out on that one, Steve.
Yeah.
Could not deny. I can actually send you, perhaps right now, a YouTube thing from, I think, CramMed, a very legit-looking medical thing that has a... that mentions this article.
Mentions this case?
Yes.
Sure, send it to me on Twitter. Send it to me on the DM thing.
Sure.
All right, Steve.
You've
given us a lot of food for thought here. And so I'll look at that article, and Tyler will too, and we'll respond to it next week. Because, it would be very interesting if they could figure out if there was some differentiation between... if there was one kind that people should avoid and one kind they should avoid with their lives or something, you know what I mean? If they could somehow, if they get any information on this, it would be really helpful. So,
Trump's weird confidence that, that it's going to be over and done with sooner than you. Anyway, thanks all. And I'll keep listening off the air and, thanks for informing us both. Over and out.
Okay. Thank you.
There you go.
Wow, that's wild. How about that?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. It'll, I mean, there is a part of me that, just to sort of jump off what Steve said, there is a part of me that, hopes that this does turn into sort of like how the flu season is, where it's like, oh, we have a really bad flu season, but at some point, in April or May, it just goes away. I know that's kind of what Trump was banging on. It's like the maybe that's about all you can hope for right now, you know, because I see these prognostications that are like 18, you know, we're going to be dealing with this for 18 months and shit. And it's like, how are we even, you know, I don't think people can handle this lockdown for like, you know, like I said before, there's going to be a lot of like unhappy campers, you know, and it's a tough pill to swallow. They probably in the back of their minds realized this was going to be the case, like I have talking to you, but it's like anybody who's locked themselves down now for like the last week is going to be pretty fucking pissed in like 10 days when they institute a national 2-week lockdown and you're back locked down for, you know, now you've been locked down for a fucking month. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So look
absolutely
for that to happen, I think. That's, you know, because I can tell you one person will be very irritated, fucking me. Even though I can, you know, I can endure this, hopefully for as long as possible, but I foresee that
happening.
You won't
be alone. Yeah, it's. I think you're absolutely right. One thing to watch out for is if we're really lucky and 2 weeks flattens the curve for us, and we relax, because at some point we have to relax the stay-at-home order. We could have a rebound. And actually, China's going through this right now in that they've managed to break the chain of domestic transmission. But now comes the thing where they'd like to start business again. They'd like to start, you know, having people travel or whatnot, and they're getting introductions from foreign sources. And so all it takes is one spark. And so we may, as frustrating as it is, we could start – you know, to come back and say, oh, no, it's not working. Or realize that it was all for naught, you know.
Right, yeah.
Delayed a little bit longer. So, but, any, you know, President Trump got that idea of the virus fading away from science, okay? The SARS virus did that. Influenza does drop down in the summer. We don't understand the seasonality of diseases. We've known about this since the days of Hippocrates, that some had very clear seasons. So that may be helpful, but it doesn't mean it's gone. And
Right. It could come roaring back. Like, you know, that's my other concern, that it's like,
well,
we will let our guard down, and then it'll come, you know. But I think, like, at least now there's sort of an appreciation for the, you know, like Dr. Fauci, like he's like a national hero, you know, to the point that it seems like they're trying to shove him out the side door because he's too popular. Now, thankfully, he was back on the ridiculous daily press conference.
I saw that.
But, you know, maybe there'll be an appreciation, like maybe, you know, I think people will be so scarred from what's going on now that, like, come, you know, September or whatever, if Dr. Fauci's out there being like, we need to get all the shit together because this is going to come back, you know, it looks like, whatever. People will fucking listen. That's at least, I guess, it's the long end of the, what I'm trying to say is that maybe people will listen and prevent the next one at this point, you know, or prevent like a huge flare-up,
yes,
you know, later in the year.
It could be, Tim. It could be. I'll just remind you, this is, probably you might not have been born yet. In 1976, we thought that the great 1918 killer swine flu had returned. They had some soldiers who got very sick and died, I think at Fort Dix, New Jersey, if I remember correctly. And they recognized that, oh, my God, we haven't seen this thing in 60 years, and here it is again. And we had a national program to produce vaccine, and it was given free to everyone in the U.S. who wanted it. And sure enough, that fall, we're waiting for the onslaught, and the virus vanished. And what happens is that legacy held on 40 years later when the 2009 flu came around, and they wanted to make vaccine, and people are going, yeah, but you guys blew this in 76. You blew the call. We have all these interesting situations where people were ready to listen, money was committed, and it didn't work. But I think you're right. I think this time Dr. Fauci probably will have a lot of credibility, and let's hope that it gets us to the right spot. So if we're really, really lucky, President Trump will be right, and this thing will go away. I'm afraid it will drop down, that this is just the herald wave for the big one coming in the fall.
Yeah, that's the concern. Where I'll be watching, this is kind of interesting, and I don't know if I'll have any, you know. Well, people should just keep an eye on it, is Japan, because they're starting to loosen the restrictions a lot there. I think their flatten the curve thing is kind of, they've done the quarantine or whatever. They shut, because they had shut down. I'm a big wrestling fan. They have a huge wrestling industry over there, so all the Japanese wrestling leagues shut down pretty much, like, I think since, you know, towards the end of February until, like, in about a week or so. So they shut down for, like, almost a month. And, you know, they'll start up soon in about a week. They're, you know, it's a go so far. And then I guess we'll get an idea of, like, when crowds start to gather again for these events and shit, if it's going to cause a problem or not, you know?
We might get lucky and it's been expunged, but we might also have the virus sneaking around in apparent infections. So that's the only way to find out is relax the restrictions. I think what you will see, though, and we have to keep an eye out for this, is heavily restricted foreign travel, and that they'll be very careful about who comes in, and Japanese citizens, for example, that travel abroad, what happens to them when they return. So if you remember when President Trump was talking about, you know, he immediately clamped down on travel from China. That was a good move. That was a smart move. It's unfortunate that that wasn't enough. But we may have to be really restrictive and careful about foreign travel in particular so that we don't re-import it. If we're lucky enough to get it under control, we don't want it to be re-imported. So we have all these challenges ahead. And it's going to be interesting.
All right. This guy has a question in the chat room. It's a little confusing, so I guess maybe you can answer it. He says, all these celebrities that are testing positive for the coronavirus, is this the virus or COVID-19? Is there any kind of separate test or only a test for the presence of the virus and the symptoms being the diagnostic tool for COVID-19? Okay, now it makes sense when I read the whole thing. So I guess to elucidate sort of the difference, like when people are, you know, so they, it's kind of like HIV and AIDS, right? So like they're, you know, when people said they had HIV, you know, then oftentimes they wouldn't end up getting AIDS. So kind of like that?
You're absolutely right. So COVID-19 is the designation for the disease. It's coronavirus disease discovered in 2019. The virus that causes it is the SARS, coronavirus 2. And so that has that special strange designation. But
the novel corona, that's where the novel comes from.
So what they test for actually is the presence of the virus, which would make the diagnosis. So you have a person with fever of unknown origin, they test negative for influenza, you go ahead and do the PCR test and it comes back positive for the virus. That would enable you to say this person has the COVID-19 infection. So we do have, just as you described before, we have names for diseases, and the causative agents sometimes have a different name, because we find them later, for example.
Yeah. All right. Well, one thing that's kind of freaked me out this week that I haven't heard many people talking about is, like, looking at that Johns Hopkins map, is that fucking, like, Russia has, like, 200... It's like you know those maps, like, they show those satellite maps of, like, the Earth at night, and they go over North Korea, and it's, like, black, because there's no...
Yeah.
That's, if you go on the Johns Hopkins website for the world with the coronavirus map, Russia, they say they only have 253 cases. So... And we have 19,000. And, like, I get that they're, you know, different parts of the world, but just the sheer size of that country, like, I find it very hard to believe that they only have 235 cases when, you know, So what do you make of that? You think that's some kind of just, they're fucking not releasing any information to the world about how this is affecting their country?
That's a possibility. We always have to keep that in the back of our mind. It's also possible that they were stricter about foreign travel. One thing that I think is in their favor is that while there'll be travel to major centers like Moscow and Leningrad, St. Petersburg, geez, I could never get that right. In the summertime, you have a lot more tourists. And so, you know, perhaps this came at the right time so that they just didn't have that many people coming in. So it's possible that that number really reflects what they can see. We have to presume, and I don't have any feeling one way or the other, we have to presume that they are testing and have enough tests and are doing enough tests to detect it. If all those things are true, it could be. Stand by. Hopefully they will be able to maintain a very low level. Time will tell. But in the past, I can tell you with other diseases, when I teach the students about hepatitis viruses, for example, and there'll be the maps will be all red, and then there'll be a blank spot like North Korea. And I have to tell the students that's because these countries don't report. Okay, so yeah. I think, you know, it would be odd to report 236 and not have that be questioned. But then again, we have to accept that they're testing, you know, and that that could be the situation.
Seems shady, so that seems really, yeah.
It could be, Tim. You know, it could be. I can tell you when I was a little kid, my mom and dad were the prime age for World War II. And my mom said, just talking in general, my dad got caught up in the draft, you know, as millions of other people did. And my mom brought up the fact that it was years after Pearl Harbor before they really understood the extent of what had happened. And she said it was blacked out. The news was blacked out. It was censored because they did not want the Japanese to know how badly they had hurt the fleet. And so she said it was classified for years. So maybe, you know, if you want to go into, we could build another conspiracy theory. Maybe it is circulating in Russia and don't want people to know. I don't think so. You know, I would say the burden would be on the conspiracy theorists to come forward and say, no, I've got these documents that show that they don't want people to know.
So
The cadence of this infection, the wintertime travel into Russia being limited, might have protected them.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that's the case because it's very weird. That's really more just like, you know what I mean? It's like you look at the map and it's like, well, what the?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well, this
their
is,
dot
this
is like
what,
tiny.
This is what we want students to do, is to go back and say, wait, that's odd. How did that happen? Because that's where you make discoveries. You know, wait, this doesn't add up. Maybe people who are interested in the paranormal will be better at that because they have all these things that don't fit, and they're kind of used to ambiguity, you know, where the rest of us think, okay, that's it, or that's not it, you know, one or the other, black and white.
Yeah. Well, so let me see, 10:36, trying to think of whatever. Oh, so this was like another – people have mentioned this, actually, so it's worth – now, again, I don't really – people shouldn't take your medical advice per se. We're sort of just mulling shit over here on the show. So what do you make of this thing where they're opening the stores – I don't know if they're doing this where you are, but they're doing it here. They're doing it, I think, in Orlando where Jim Vujovic is or where one of the folks in the chat room is, that they're opening the stores early for seniors to come in and shop. Which I like that idea, and my mom wanted to do it, but then it crossed my mind where it's like things are so uncertain right now that, like, I don't want to wake up, like, in 2 weeks and have them come on the news and be like, oh, turns out that thing where we had seniors go and shop together, that was a big mistake. You know what I mean? It's like, is it too – am I being too paranoid or – you know what I mean? It's like part of me's like – hey, that's a noble idea. Then it's like, I don't trust anything right now, man.
One has to ask questions. But, yes, they're doing that here for, I think it's the cutoff is age 65. You have to be at least 65 to go into the store. And I know somebody that went, and she said, no, they're not really checking IDs, so there were a lot of elderly people, but there were also a lot of other people who clearly weren't age 65 yet.
Yeah.
It's a good thought. You know, I mean, I see what they're trying to do. Much depends on, you know, how crowded the store gets. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's good. And potentially these people are strictly sheltering. And so when they come in, they're not really heavily afflicted. But if they are infected and in the quiet stage, then we may set up a situation where we have a lot of targets right there, and people that we don't want to have, you know, get infected. So this is the classic no good deed goes unpunished. I think they're trying
exactly,
to do the right
thing.
So what I would say is if your mom goes, the way to handle this is make sure you practice good social distancing. You know, just stay clear, wash your hands and all that, and it might work out okay, because I think if anybody's going to be compliant, it's that group of people, you know, who have the most to lose. And so they're probably
not
on the beaches in Orlando partying down and flying in to go to them. So anyway, I understand what they're doing, and hopefully it will work. You can always come up with a scenario where it doesn't. Might also be helpful because when people are a little bit older, they're not as fast. And that kind of irritates other people sometimes, I think, that they can't move as quickly. And so it takes them a little bit longer. And so I think they'll feel maybe more at ease, you know, when they're kind of in the age group. So I think it's a good plan right now, and you'll have to show me that it really doesn't work before I'd say don't do that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It makes me nervous, that's all, because it's like,
you know,
like you said, no good deed goes
gonna,
unpunished. It's like
everything is going to make us nervous, Tim. And so the thing is that what you really have is a high at-risk population. And so this is where people can get really upset, but you know, folks that aren't really helpful or compliant can really easily track that to folks, and just with a little bit of extra effort, we maybe could limit that. And so hopefully we have to start with the assumption that most people are people of goodwill and wouldn't want to do that. And so that's the advantage that we have. And I hope that turns out to be the way it is.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, well, I hope we can rise to the occasion as a people. Jim Vujovic says that the people working at the supermarkets down in Orlando are upbeat and helpful and friendly. So that's good, you know.
we need
positivity right now.
Yeah, and they're working harder than ever. And you know, I mean, God, they're probably a lot of them are probably working all night long, because what they're doing here at Safeway is I think they close at 10 or 11, and they stock all night.
Yeah.
And then they open
right
up at 6. And, geez. And then the next day you get to do it all again. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Like I said before, it's like you wonder if people will peak, like, hoarding food. There's only so much space. Like, you know, that's the part of me where it's they say, I mean, there are people who get really upset about the toilet paper thing, and it's like, just let it go, dude. Like, do you not realize how, like, have you not watched, like, the human, you know, our society in the last, this is like Storm Area 51. This is like fucking, this is a meme. It's not even, you know, it gets into people's heads and they fucking do it and they don't. You know, they just jump on it's a fad. It's not like, you know, so I know some people who are like get angry. It's like, yes, they're idiots, but like, you know, don't you realize they're fucking idiots? Like, haven't you realized this by now? Like, if you ever wondered how the idiots would respond to a pandemic, they'd buy all the fucking toilet paper.
I had to have a list of 10,000 things that would happen in a pandemic, buying all the toilet paper would not have been on that list. So I'm upset.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, you know, I'm upset because missed yet another opportunity to make $1 million. You know, if only I could have, you know, sort of like seen that one coming. So.
Well, didn't you, I guess you didn't see the article about those. Did you see the article about the guys in Texas who bought up all the hand sanitizer last month, anticipating something like this? And they were essentially like nationally shamed. They gave it all back to, gave it away and shit. But it was like, it's like, you don't want to, you know, you want to be on the right side. You want to do the right thing right now.
Well, am I correct? It's good that you didn't they were profiteering. Am I correct that they were trying to sell it at a big markup?
Yeah, they were selling it marked up with the argument that, like, they did the work of going to all the stores in Texas to buy them. So, therefore, you know, they needed to make up the money they lost driving to the different dollar stores. And that was their argument. But it was they're like, you know, we're really doing a service. That's what they said.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I guess I would also say that that's fine. You know, a reasonable markup. I don't know where you draw that line. But, yeah, they got – the reason they were shamed is I think they –
Went too far.
But,
yeah,
well,
yeah,
exactly. the whole idea was they saw something, they made that deduction, good for them, but, man, come on. Anyway,
they couldn't have anticipated how bad it was going to be either, you know what I mean? Like,
no.
I don't think anybody
Absolutely.
Could have predicted. Yeah, it's like you were saying about the toilet paper. Well, experts,
we
but.
People, you know, our senators who may be insider traded, on information that they had. I think that didn't the Congress specifically exempt themselves from being barred from insider
trading?
Yeah,
there is some kind of loophole there where they can't really, you know, it would be almost impossible to prove. I mean, part of me is like, of course, again, it's like kind of like idiots with toilet paper. Part of me, when I hear these stories, is like, well, of course they did. They're scumbags. Like, what do you expect? And it's
exactly.
Like, I try not to get too bogged down in that kind of thing only because it's just like, you know, they're not going to, you know, they're just going to spin their wheels and spin it and shit. And now's not the time to really, like, investigate them or something. You know what I'm saying? It's like, well, we could deal with that later is kind of my thing. I try to. I'm equally outraged, but it's like, what are you going to do about it? I can't, if it was
no,
in like
actually,
6 months when this is all cooled off and people want to investigate it, dude, please, I would love it.
No, I think you had a good
like,
insight there. We have other fish to fry here. We got other problems. You want to come back and put them in jail later, let's do that later. That's a good point.
Right. It's kind of like... this whole thing, and this is kind of a can of worms. We've got like maybe 15 minutes left. So, but this, the whole thing where it's like there's some people are calling it the Chinese virus, and it's clearly, you know, I understand, and they can justify it. You know, their argument holds water in a sense that it came from China, but it's like it feels, and I think most people can kind of see that it's like, well, you're trying to scapegoat here, and it's really, you know, now's not the now's not even the time for that argument, I guess. It's kind of my thing where it's like, I get that people think that it's racist and you know, something it is. And you know,
it's,
so to me, it's, but like, we need to focus on the fucking disease, man. Like arguing about what it's called is what they want us to do. So to me, it's like, you know what, if you want to be a racist asshole and call it the Chinese virus or whatever the fuck, Chinese flu, like go for it. But it's the coronavirus, man. That's what it is, and let's work on surviving it rather than arguing about like about what
to
call it and shit.
I think you're absolutely right. I have an idea about why they might do that, and it holds too. If it's a bioweapon or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. This thing's killing us. We got to deal with this first, and we can assign blame later. Now, the way that viruses were classically named was that they were often named by geographic point of discovery, first description.
Right.
So if you think about the 1918 killer flu, sometimes called the Spanish flu, because that's where the first definitive case was described. So we've done that for a long time. The first time that I remember a geographic name being... I guess sort of not used and people were dissuaded from using it was when the hantavirus outbreak occurred in 1993, I think it was, in the Four Corners region of the U.S. And the way that virus is designated now is hantavirus Sinombre, without name or without number. And what they wanted was, it was on a Navajo reservation, and they did not want to be forever associated with this killer virus. And so anyway, we do kind of take account of sensibilities and sensitivities, but this is my personal opinion, and I don't expect everybody will share it. I think calling it the Chinese virus is one of the steps in being able to say, it's not my fault for whatever went wrong in their response. I couldn't do anything because it came from China. Who could stop that?
Yes.
Now, on the other side of the coin, China is, I think, open to legitimate criticism for not being very forthright in
absolutely
the discovery of the problem, and actually kind of chastising the guy, the ophthalmologist who passed away, who first
found. I guess they apologized like yesterday or something for sparing him and shit. So, which is
a
good thing.
And they gave him a bad time and, you know, accused him of being a rumor monger and all that. And it does, you know, I mean, you don't want people just shooting stuff out there because it has consequences, as we can see. But it, unfortunately, he was right. And so, you know, we lost time. But anyway, their response was maybe suboptimal, let's call it that. And in 2002, with the first SARS, they were definitely covering up. Now, I thought a lot of those things had been worked through. And they did produce a sequence, and everybody's using that, and that was very helpful. But I guess not everything. It changed the way we wanted it to.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the sort of overarching point is, like, the people who are doing it to be provocative because they want people to talk about that and not, you know.
I think you're Jim, I think you're
not what's really going on.
Sorry to say. That's my suspicion that you have laid it out. And so, yes, it's much better for them to have us fighting over something that is of no consequence right now. You know, it really isn't. And, I mean, they have a different agenda. And I guess if I was in that position, I'd try to point everywhere I could to. You know, so there we have it.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave that at that, and I don't think people, you know, I don't think it'll catch, I don't think Chinese flu will catch on, because it's like, you know, it just, to me, it just feels really wrong. Anyway, but we're going to talk next week. I think folks probably could have figured that out. I don't know how long we're going to keep talking, but, you know, we'll kind of ride this out till we get a better sort of understanding maybe of where we're at, I think. And so, you know, the scariest part of doing this in a way is, you know, last week, we talked about this at the beginning, we'll kind of wrap it up here, but, you know, last week there were 1,200 cases in America, and now there are 19,000, and you predicted 10,000, so... you know, it's almost double the prediction you had. And last week it was sort of this jaw-dropping, like, you know, it's like, oh, I hope Tyler's just being, you know, overly cautious here. Because you said, like, in 2 weeks it'll be 100,000, which would be next week. And considering we're already at 20,000 now and they've really just got the testing going, like, it seems well within the possibility that we'll be at 100,000 next week.
It
but,
is.
I mean, what do you think?
I think you're right that we could see that because this is a function of two things. The epidemic is growing and our testing capability is also growing. And so we're still at the end of all this, we're still half blind because we still don't understand the full depth of where we are in the curve. But I'm going to tell you that the governors of Connecticut is also on lockdown, right? Illinois, California, you know, this New York, they know what the projections are and they're scared and they're going to do everything they can to stop this. And that includes hurting the economy, really hammering the economy. That tells you how nervous these people are, Tim. And that should make us also think, yeah, I have to be prepared. I need to be prepared to shelter in place. I need to be prepared to do it for a while. So, yeah, it's
right. Exactly.
There's
conspiratorial, reverse conspiratorial, but it's like the idea that like, oh, this is being done to hurt Trump. It's like this is quite the conspiracy. Like, who's Italy's in on this too? Like, what you know? So we're going to destroy ourselves and self-immolate, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
You're absolutely right that these are governors who are subjecting the citizens of their state to suffering and the hope that it will prevent worse. So, yeah, I don't think that anybody's out to get anybody. I think they're honestly doing what they think they have to do to prevent disaster. So I'll tell you one thing to watch. And this is where it's kind of clued me in, is watch the Sunday political talk shows, because when Anthony Fauci and other people come out, they've got the message of the week, and that's where you could see the wheel begin to turn, and the messaging begin to turn, and so I think this week will be interesting because they may start preparing us for other things that are going to be really unpleasant, and that's where you might get your first inkling.
Yeah, well, you know, they say we're like 10 days behind Italy, so, you know, but by this time next week, we'll really, this will be coming to bear, it seems, so.
Well, I think, honestly, we will so surpass Italy, it won't be believable. So, that's my pessimistic take.
Yeah, well, like I said at the beginning when we were talking about this, it does see, we talked about this earlier. Someone posts breaking news, brother-in-law is in the National Guard but works out of state, scheduled return for drill this weekend. He was told he is not to leave the state he is in. So I don't know what that even, you know.
Oh, they're getting ready. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I would assume so, but that doesn't necessarily mean, like, in New York, they called in the National Guard to come and build beds and shit. So it's like people hear, oh, they're calling in the National Guard, and they think, like, they're going to be fucking rolling down the street in tanks and shit. It's like, no, dude, they're
– No.
They're fucking ringing the cash registers at the grocery store because we don't run out of people. So
yes. No, you're absolutely
that kind
right.
Of stuff.
It could be mobile hospitals, the tent sorts of things where they can assess patients before they let them into the hospital, you know, put them in the right spot. So that's what
it's like
say.
Any job that's needed.
Like,
it's like any job that's needed, man, you know?
Absolutely. And it sounds to me like they're just getting ready. Way back in the day, I used to have friends that were in the Guard, and that's how it would go, is that they tell them, no, you have to stay within 50 miles, and you have to call them. And so I think they're just getting ready for the possibility of a mobilization, which would make sense. It's not really that. Oh my God, you know, we're gonna have all kinds of mayhem. We're gonna have enough with the disease. So.
Yeah. Well, like I said at the beginning of the show, that has supplanted in my mind sort of what is worrying me less the. Because I barely leave the fucking house, so I didn't really need to worry much about the disease. But the just the absolute chaos erupting, you know, the possibility. This is like a tinderbox, man. You know, worries me a lot. And a lot of people, you know, this is kind of a lot of stuff that was like a lot of problems in America kind of coming home to roost all at once. So it's like, you know, all the stuff where they're like, oh, people couldn't. You know, most families aren't ready for an emergency. They only have like $500 in the bank. It's like, well, here we are. You know,
yes.
now this is that dire scenario is in place for everybody. So, for a lot of people, you know, so, and also the medical thing, it was like, we don't have really a very, we weren't up to snuff for this. Apparently not. So it's like, it's going
on
with us too.
Yeah. I think you're again, correct that, a lot of the structural problems that we have, things that have changed so much since I was a kid. And one of the things is that there are so many people who who truly do live paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, the jobs that we used to take it, you know, for granted, like in my parents' generation, that you would have good jobs that would have good benefits, they vanished. And we didn't even, you know, see what happened. So, yes, a lot of these things will come back to haunt us.
Yeah, so that's what worries me more, and I try not to let it get in my head too much, but it's like, oh, shit, what are people going to do when this gets to 100,000? Like, what are they going to do when it gets to, if it gets to a million? Like, they're going to lose their shit. That's what worries me.
Well,
you know, am I going to have to, like, defend my home against marauding raiders looking for fucking toilet paper? Like, how far off the deep end are people going to go? Are they going to start fucking, you know, and that, again, that's the other part. It's like, most people, the vast majority of people are good people, but it's like, desperate people do desperate things, and, you know, there's going to be a lot more desperate people soon. So, that worries me.
If we can preempt some of that with National Guard making sure that food is available, you know, grocery stores stay open, and that people can get what they need, that will go a long way. The other thing is that I think the psychology might change, although this is pretty horrible to imagine, that as people sicken and die around us, that we'll be more concentrating on that than anything else.
Yeah.
Naturally. So we have to hope that it's not that bad. And I'll tell you what to watch out for is when the local authorities come out and they start giving us instructions about body collection. And I'm praying it doesn't come to that. Well, you saw the procession in Italy, right, on the news where they...
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So what will happen if it's like 1918, they had 600,000 people dead in a matter of a few weeks when it really got raging. Yes. And so there weren't coffins. They talked about, you know, coffins being stolen, piled up like cordwood. But you can't, the funeral homes can't cope with that volume either. And so we'll have to find
a way.
No,
and it's really, the whole other dimension of this that people, you know, these are like, I feel like these are stories I'll tell my grandkids or some shit, like, but it's like they, even like if somebody died tomorrow, like they got hit by a bus, it's like they can't even have a funeral for them because of the virus. It's like
that's
they're
right.
Live streaming funerals because they can't.
That's right.
Like, you know, so it's just the way this has transformed society in the course of like 10 days is stunning. And you know, I worry about, like I said, the psyche of people as we get deeper into this, where, you know, like Carol said, we have to fight despair because we will see this through. We'll see this through.
Yes.
You know, and everybody will be, I don't know, joyous, I think, once it feels like we're through this disaster. So look forward to that, I guess, folks. You know, and buckle up. You there, Tyler? Are you there, Tyler? Weird. All right, I lost. That's odd. He's still on the thing, but all right. Well, I lost Tyler, so we'll wrap the show up there. If folks have questions for next week's show, you can send them to me, Tim@banalofamerica.com. Find me on Twitter @Banal. Find me on Facebook, Tim Banal, the one with the rabbit picture right now. And yeah, thanks for tuning in, folks. Hopefully this wasn't too doom and gloom. Trying to keep an upbeat gallows sense of humor about this and, you know, trying to hopefully, you know, I don't know, do a service to some folks in a way, at least me, sort of work out what's going through my mind here as this is all going on and have somebody to talk to. And as I said to Tyler before we started tonight's show, it's like, I decided to do this just because it's like the only thing I can control in all this craziness. You know, I need to have some semblance of order as this insane, crisis unfurls. So it was like, well, I need someone to talk to, and I need some kind of outlet to express myself. So let's fire up All of America again. So, we'll be back next week, and covering all the various developments in this story. So, thank you all for listening, and be safe out there. I'll do my best as well, and we'll all come up again next Friday night. Good night, everybody.